Welcome to CodeCast. We're a podcast that focuses on everything tech, and we give you an idea of what developers, startups, and creatives are up to in Zambia and across Africa. Every 2 weeks, we explore different topics and applications of technology in the real world. Every episode is brought to you by Agora Code Community. For more information, visit agoracode.community or follow us on Twitter at CodeAgora.
Hi, my name is Bumba Siamalube. I'm the project officer at the British Council, and you're listening to CodeCast.
Wow.
Yes, Mpoma, I'm back. Did you miss me?
I missed you quite a lot, actually. You have no idea how empty and alone we've been on this podcast journey in 2020.
I'm just sad the gift did not even reach out. You did miss my laugh, right? Mm-hmm. You did miss me. What did you whisper?
He's whispering because we've already started recording. Anyway, for everybody that doesn't know, we have a sound engineer in the studio always, whenever we're recording. His name is Gift. Hi, Gift. He's waving. He's waving. You know how our recording starts, Cynthia. They're always abrupt, unplanned, unscripted.
That's a good one, me coming back.
Welcome back.
Thanks.
How's the Christmas holiday?
That's great.
Did you get Christmas gifts?
Oh, no, I wish I did. But, you know, I've passed that age of getting Christmas gifts.
Okay.
Because I discovered Santa is not
real. You know what? You should tell that to my girlfriend. She's hell-bent on having Christmas every year. And there should be gifts. And we should tell everybody that Santa exists. I just want to know, like, is there a threshold? At what age do we start telling these kids that Santa doesn't exist? Because I once told my little cousin, she was 8 at the time, that Santa doesn't exist. The little girl cried, I don't know, cats and dogs raining tears.
I think
it's interesting.
Back to how you're raising that particular child, I guess.
I think you tell them as soon as possible, like at 5 maybe. Like, then you start dealing with it.
Do you know what my problem is with Christmas in Africa? I can't speak for other countries. I'm going to speak for my household. Christmas is like this trick we use to tell or teach kids about being nice and the spirit of giving, right?
Yeah.
It's like we're using this construct to teach these very important core skills.
Yeah.
And these people only ever really appreciate them at the end of the year. They can't separate those skills from, or those character traits from Christmas. It's like they go hand in hand. I don't like that.
Yeah, that's a good point though.
So if you have any thoughts about that, or you want to tell me why we do this, and maybe I can change my mind, feel free to send us a voice message. We're still advocating for voice messages. We've never received one willingly ever since we started.
Are you playing it when you receive it?
Well, if we actually received one, we'd play it in the next podcast. Like,
okay.
Play this before we start the episode or whenever.
Okay, I'm looking forward to that.
Cynthia, this is your cue. You need to speak so that the fans...
No, it's because I have received some, but they're too personal.
This is not fair. Okay, maybe let me rephrase. We have a website and we have a place where you can send your voice messages to CodeCast.
About CodeCast.
Oh, Cynthia, are you going to spill the tea? Are you going to spill the tea? There's something here. What is it?
I am not spilling. Last time I spilled, SSA, it went...
Yes, we talked about it on the show. And we don't have an idea what happened to you afterwards. We don't know if the person reached out and...
I know, we're actually good pals now.
Oh, great.
Ibrahim?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
What happened?
I'll let her tell the story.
Well, actually, I never knew that I had a bunch of fans. But, so he had listened to the podcast. And it so happened that I was going for a conference in Nigeria at Lagos. And he was there and I got... Because
he finally met the person he only listened to
via the episodes. Yes. Did I put in all the details?
Yes, that's the whole
tea. I
shall not spill the rest. Anyway, there's a strange voice in the studio today. I'll let him introduce himself and then he's going to tell us a little bit about him and then we'll get into the show.
Okay, cool. My name is Bumba Siamalube. I work for the British Council as a project officer there. Most of my friends call me B, so that's better because my name's Marty, it's hard to pronounce. So B is good enough. I work for the British Council as a project officer, and the British Council is a official cultural relations organization for the UK for education opportunities and cultural relations. So what we do is build friendly knowledge and understanding between people in the UK and people in Zambia specifically here.
Mm-hmm.
And we work in over 100 countries. We work in the arts, where we try promote the arts sector in the sense that a lot of, for example, in Zambia here, the arts sector is still growing, and a lot of people do not see it as a full-time career path. Most artists are usually doing it part-time. I have a job, then you know, I do some artwork.
We're doing the podcast part-time.
Yes. Yeah. So we're trying to support that environment where people are free and the opportunities around that are able to support an artist to take up being an artist full-time. So we do that by through partners, so we do not do the work ourselves. The fact that we try to build friendly knowledge and understanding is not us imposing the UK values or how things are done there, but sharing the good practice that is there, the Zambian market, the Zambian sector. Because if you look at hubs in the UK, a pretty big thing. Mm-hmm. There are cities around, or there are towns where, or areas rather, I should say, where, let's say, a building was abandoned and artists took it up. But the work that is going on around there is building, is bringing other firms around. Because I think they're attracted to an environment where there's a lot of young people, there's a lot of creativity going on, there's a lot of resources you can tap from, because a lot of young people working in free spaces are developing new and better items. So we try to sort of build that sort of narrative or that sort of idea around in Zambia and support it. And how we do that is we work through our partners and try to see what is going on, then how do we support whatever is going on without changing it or without influencing it. We also work in education and society.
Mm-hmm.
And our work there mostly is professional development for teachers under a program called Connecting Classrooms. Mm-hmm. And the idea is, as the name says, Connecting Classrooms. It's about connecting classrooms in Zambia and in the UK. And the idea around it is how do we share knowledge and how do we build global citizens? And how we do that is through professional development for teachers. So teachers are trained in certain skills like child protection, how to safeguard themselves against any form of... maybe a teacher can be accused as well by a child wrongly. So how then do they protect themselves? As well as then how do they protect the children?
Yeah.
Yeah, because children come from different backgrounds. Some of them have been through different experiences. So having that environment where there's a lot of children with different backgrounds, how then do you manage that as a teacher? Communication and collaboration is another training. Creativity and imagination, critical thinking and problem solving. Digital literacy and many others that we support or we teach the teachers on. Then there's another aspect of the same Connecting Classrooms program is where we partner schools in Zambia and the UK.
Yeah.
And the idea is we get us, let's say, a school in Lusaka, then we partner with a school in Wales or any other country in the UK. And the idea is they share resources and good practice as well as partner on projects. So they partner on projects, then we facilitate some travel grants where we have some UK teachers come to Zambia and some Zambian teachers go to the UK for them to share and, you know, learn from each other. And what we've seen over the years is that it's quite impressive and interesting, the fact that a lot of teachers in the UK have learned a lot in Zambia. I think example I gave was, or usually given, is a lot of teachers thought, or the program people perceive it saying, it's mostly obvious the Zambian teachers learning more from the UK teachers. But you'd be surprised that a lot of teachers in the UK, from the UK, learn a lot from Zambian teachers. Because in most Zambian schools, you find... you have an average of, let's say, 50 or 60 pupils in certain instances, or 40, and one teacher is managing the whole class, and that's the whole day for that. Of course, there have been some changes where teachers are taking different subjects, even for primary school, but still, it's one teacher against 50 pupils.
Yeah.
But in the UK, you find on average, maybe you have 20 pupils in a class, and you have a teacher and an assistant teacher. So then how do you manage 40 pupils in a class alone? What resources are you using? Certain instances, you find maybe you have 20 books against 50 pupils. So then how do you manage and how do you ensure that there's that environment where everybody learns? So having such a skill is something that a lot of UK teachers, I think, are finding very useful. How you utilize resources around you, things like plastic bottles, how you teach recycling, climate change, using your environment. Mm-hmm. And utilizing that in teaching is something that I think has been one of the successes of Connecting Classrooms.
Okay, that's really, really dope. And I know that Connecting Classrooms is part of the reason why we're actually sitting here today. We were having conversations around some of the skills that developers would like to have in 2020, yeah. Some of the things they'd like to hear about. And we did have a couple of people interested in things around, you know, critical thinking, what kind of methods they can use to communicate with each other and so on and so forth. And it was really, really interesting. And I really like the concept of the Connecting Classrooms. I don't know if you've taken a look at it, Cynthia, but it's really interesting. What caught my eye was the digital hubs that you guys were doing. That's something that I'm really interested in, because for a long time, we've been talking about how we do a lot of work, we do a lot of community work within Lusaka.
Yeah.
But we don't have enough programs outside Lusaka, for example. And that was a model that was in, I think that's more than 10 locations, right? And these most of these locations are outside Lusaka. Yeah. So like, how did it work? Are there any lessons we can learn from that kind of model and see how we can try and get more people outside Lusaka to benefit from the meetups that we do, even things like just the conference, you know, it's in Lusaka, but if do we have programs in between the conference that allow other people to participate as well, instead of having to travel?
How are the digital hubs structured?
Okay, so currently we put a hold on supporting digital hubs, okay. But the idea behind it was we'll go to a school, partner with MTN as British Council, then we would donate computers to the school,
okay.
Then train one or two teachers from the school as digital ambassadors, then we sort of create that environment that allows people to have some digital skills. So that's how it was structured. And the idea was we'd use online resources on a website called Schools Online.
Okay.
It's a global, supported by the British Council, a global platform where students as well as teachers can find resources. New materials on how to teach in different teaching styles, as well as pupils in terms of just reading material. Was available to them there. So that was the structure around it.
Okay. You've mentioned teaching structures. Which one was, in your opinion, came out more reliable when it comes to the teaching structures?
Okay. What we found to be very important or to have the most impact is school leadership.
Okay.
And the idea behind it is, as long as there's no leadership in a school, there'll be no learning.
Mm-hmm.
So school leadership, according to studies, indicates that it's the second thing that supports students in class other than learning. So for a child to perform very well, other than a teacher teaching in class, the thing that influences them performing very well is school leadership. So it's about how is a leader in a school creating that environment that allows the students to learn. So after identifying that gap and the impact that school leadership has, we trained every school, school leaders in Lusaka, that in terms that is the head teacher as well as heads of department. Head teacher, the vice head teacher as well as the school management. We trained all of them in Lusaka, and we're now going to Luapula. And the idea is we want to help school leaders rather, understand how to create that environment, as well as allowing them to share resources amongst themselves, as well as good practice. Because if you find certain schools are performing very well,
mm-hmm.
same in Lusaka, other schools are performing very badly. So how is this school doing it better than the other school?
Oh, yeah.
So how do the teachers and the head teachers, as well as the leaders in schools, share resources and good practice? Then also, how are they utilizing resources that they have more effectively? And because you might find certain instances where funding from government for books and other things in schools might not be coming in very often, but how is the leader managing that school effectively, that it, despite not receiving resources from maybe the government, they're able to run the school and people are able to learn. So two case studies I can give was one at Kablongo Boys.
Okay.
They're now, I think they're producing almost 100 or something, in the hundreds, boxes of tomatoes every week that they sell. Yes, and they make money from that, and that helps support the school. So that helps support the school in and actually raising funds that also helps the school run more effectively. So it's about that leader looking out of the box to say, I have land here, it's bare land, what do I do with it?
Yeah.
Another teacher will just sit down and say, you know what, punish the kids, just and slash the the grass outside, then you're done with it.
We used to quite playing golf.
No, I called it punishment.
Well, I mean, it was punishment, but you know, to make yourselves feel a bit better,
you. Do you see my hands? They're very soft.
Did you ever slash this?
No, I.
What did you do? Yes.
No. Manual labor. Nah. That's not something that I cherish.
Was the kind of student who
really got punished.
Good behavior. So
no, I think he was just smart enough to get away with it.
Well, it's. I won't say anything, but for all the kids out there, I was a very.
You escaped punishment.
No, I was not problematic.
I don't believe that, honestly.
I followed the rules.
Okay. Well, we'll take it up there. So this school in the program that you used in Lusaka, was it a mixture of private and government, or it was one of the two?
No, just strictly government schools. And yeah, and the idea around is most private schools are well-funded.
Mm-hmm.
And they have different structures. Because you find in a private school, you have... You have there are a lot more roles that have been broken down. So you find there's someone in charge of school administration,
yeah,
more specifically. But in most government schools, you find the head teacher is the one who's responsible for almost everything in terms of managing everything in class. And what we realized was the fact that most head teachers were spending their times in the whole day in the office,
mm-hmm,
not knowing what's going on in classrooms.
Yeah.
They couldn't support the pupil ultimately and how to improve that environment for that pupil, because all they get is secondhand information from a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
So what our program tries to do also is to allow the head teacher as a leader of the school to spend less time in his office, but in classes actually. So sometimes teaching. So we encourage them to actually go to class and teach, so they understand the challenges that the teachers go through, as well as the relationship between the teachers and the pupils, so that they can actually ultimately make decisions that impacts
the
pupils and not just sit behind the closed doors and not understanding what goes on in schools.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's a very robust, I think, training. It's been very much welcomed by the Ministry of Education. They co-funded it for the Connecting Classrooms 3 program we had,
mm-hmm,
in training the 200 school head teachers that we had in Lusaka. And Lwapula province is also doing the same, and we're hoping to train the whole lot of Lwapula as well.
Mm-hmm.
And just looking at how impactful this school leadership is, Lusaka was was not performing very well. It was, I think, number 8 and number 7 out of the 10 provinces that we have in terms of performance. And Lusaka has the most well-developed schools.
I can guess why. We are lax. Because we feel like we've got everything in Lusaka, and we don't need to put as much work into something as everybody else. Am I right to some degree?
Yeah, I think you are, honestly, yeah.
People appreciate this stuff. Like, have you ever seen, you've seen it in community work, like whenever you go somewhere, when you go to a place where they've never seen technology, they've seen it or maybe never had a chance to interact with, when you give them that opportunity to do that, they're excited and they do more with it than someone that's maybe grown up around that kind of environment.
Yeah, true. I do agree with you. And I think that was that's one of the things that we identified. I think most leaders in Lusaka were a bit more relaxed, because you find... another example I gave of how impactful school leadership was is in Katete. There was a school leader who went around the community, helped the community understand to say, I'm not raising, or I'm not just helping pupils in school as a head teacher, but I'm building leaders of the community. Then how do you support me into ensuring that all our children in this community actually learn, not just in school, but out of school as well?
Mm-hmm.
How do we build community leaders? And he was able to get resources from the community in terms of... The school managed to raise funds to buy cement, but the local community people would come to the school, donate bent bricks, or just work around the school to build
mm-hmm,
blocks.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole community came together and built, I think, about 3 to 4 new classroom blocks for the school.
Yeah.
And this is out of the initiative of a teacher. But you never find initiatives like this in Lusaka.
You know what? Going back to what we were just from talking about in terms of people being relaxed here, you know, it brings me back to... and I think we'll tackle critical thinking after this.
Yeah.
Like for us, in terms of community building, I don't know about DevSea, but for Agora Code, for example, one of the biggest challenges we had was motivating people to come for events and to get them to be consistent in terms of being part of a community, whether it's in a physical space or it's in an online space, for example. And I think we had a meetup once where we had predominantly young kids, like people in high school and primary school that came through. And I think I remember Cynthia emphasizing something about you're given opportunities, right?
Yeah.
No one's going to take you the full, like, 100 yards. Yeah. Like, you will get you to a certain point, but it's up to you to use what you're given to then, you know, go the rest of the way and all that sort of thing. And then you're given the tools, the resources. You guys run a great program where people can get scholarships and do, like, all these certification programs. There's these Andela fellowships that are there that are open for everybody to participate in and so on and so forth. So what is the biggest challenge? Why aren't people taking these opportunities and grabbing them with both hands and looking at the value that they provide?
Okay. I think...
Well, it's an open question. No, even you, Cynthia.
No, I'll let you start first. Okay. Damn.
Okay.
Oh, fair enough.
Enough of ladies first.
Okay, that means that's a good question. I'll look at it from two angles. One part is, I think as we said earlier, when you were a bit more privileged, you'd be a bit more relaxed. So despite you creating those opportunities, a lot of people do not see the value. Like, let's say, for example, how the ministry, for example, British Council might bring actual financial resources to the program, but other partners might not want to jump on the program if they don't have financial resources, not realizing the fact that they have other resources with them. And what sort of benefits that come with those, despite not them being financial, but maybe even just growing their networks. So a lot, I think last time me and you had a chat, we also spoke about volunteering. A lot of people do not volunteer if you don't get some form of return.
Yeah. Or if it's like community meetups, you're not getting a t-shirt, you're not getting stickers, you won't show up for an event.
Yeah. So I think people do not take up opportunities and run with them in most cases, that whenever the financial incentive ends, or wherever someone's effort ends, you end there as well, not realizing of how much value you can build from there. Like, people help you build a base, but you, it's up to you to take up that base. And most people who are a bit more comfortable, you know, I have a job, or I have some sort of finances, we rarely see opportunities where we can take whatever opportunity, no matter how little it is, that has been given to us, and make actually something bigger from there, because we're a little bit more comfortable in whatever we have.
So could it be that maybe we sort of have been raised, whichever it is, to have this whole feel of I need to start big and not appreciating the small beginnings, the humble True. Beginnings.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And for me, I think the the part that I have always hated is most people going Boma Ilanga Nepo. So, oh dear listeners, this means government should do something.
Should do something.
And as much as we jokingly laugh about it, I feel it has really crippled our society.
Yeah.
I'm speaking for Zambia, that is, in that you see a majority really, you find it's a community, they can see clearly that they don't have good drainages, right?
Yeah.
But they'll call on to government. Well, government will do its best, but eventually, I was impressed recently, I was passing through one of the roads in Chilenje.
Yeah.
I saw these men digging up, they were actually digging up some furrows to allow water to pass better because it was going into their houses and whatnot.
Yeah.
And very few people actually take such initiative. They would rather cry out and say government is not coming to do drainages for us. But then if it's affecting you, you are the one to get up and do something and make it better. I think that should be something that we need to teach the upcoming generations, parents, please. So that, you know, it's all about thinking outside the box. Yes, I've been given a pen. If the pen has run out of ink, do I still have to hold on to the pen and wait for the very same person who gave me that pen to bring more ink? Or I should go look either for another pen, or if it's the kind where you can do a refill, I go and refill it.
Yeah.
I think that's really something that we need to start harnessing.
I think interesting part also, I think as we get to critical thinking problem solving, something that we try to address in our program as well, is in how do you teach a lot of, especially teachers, how do you help teachers teach in classes the pupils how to be innovative, how to be creative, how to think outside the box, I should say. How do you utilize the resources around you? How do you make the most of the little that you have? and how do you ensure that you understand the purpose of what you, of the subjects that you're learning, and how do you apply them now in real life, and not just look at things as academic, but how do you apply whatever you learn in school in life? How is it applicable?
Yeah.
So yeah, that's pretty interesting.
What? I haven't given my opinion
on
how we can solve this.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
Or what is causing it?
You know what? I have many theories, and some are not very radio friendly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Give us the radio friendly one.
Okay. I think for me, in terms of our community organizations, and where I feel like we're not doing enough, or people aren't doing enough to appreciate the kind of, I think there's a bit of a gap in terms of the skills we're trying to teach and how they can be applicable to an individual person.
Mm-hmm.
I think people aren't seeing why you're having a React workshop, for example. Like, we're not going beyond the practice.
Mm-hmm.
It's like it's social, I don't know how it's social, we're just having fun with this.
Yeah.
And we focused on the fun a little too much, and we're forgetting about the actual practical skills we're giving that can give these guys an opportunity to go to the next level. And we're not doing enough of what's this thing we do, like in organizations where we highlight, there's a thing, success stories.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I know DevC started doing success stories at some point, but I don't know why it stopped. But there aren't enough success stories that are building incentive for people to actually take this to the next level. Not just look at the food that people are providing when you go for a meetup, and not just look at t-shirts or stickers. The workshop itself should be an incentive for you. It's free. That should be the primary motivation for you coming and learning something.
Thanks, Mukoma. I was in charge of the success stories. I'll start them again.
Hey, this is feedback. this is feedback.
Okay, but I'm curious then, what sort of thing do you think we can do around how do we, I think we have a lot of creative people out there,
mm-hmm.
but how then do we ensure that if you have a training or if you have a workshop or whatever that you're doing in your work, is how do we make sure that people understand to say, we're not here to give you a path of how do you make it, or how do you start how do you use this skill, but just give you that skill, and then how are you creative enough or innovative enough to apply it somewhere which grows into a success story she can write about. Because most people, you sit in a workshop, let's say it's about how do you maximize the use of social media in whatever business that you're doing. You get the skills, then how are you creative enough to make the most of it? Maybe that's one aspect we don't address in workshops that we have.
Mm-hmm.
You find you get the skills and, you know, go out there, figure it out on your own. So is it something that people should try develop on their own, or maybe us who are having such trainings, is it also our responsibility to help people understand, saying, you need to bring something to the table as well.
Where do we draw the line, though?
Yeah, you can't teach everybody everything, huh? It'll be a month workshop.
It's a skill, right? Mm. So the people who are going to do the training will do their training. And maybe, yeah, they could help in maybe highlighting some success stories or some areas that the skills they are teaching can be applied,
okay.
Sort of like a pointer. But in the end, it's up to the individual to work it out. I don't think as a trainer or as a mentor or as a lecturer or a teacher, you really have enough time to, you teach the skills, then again you start running through that person on how they apply it.
Yeah, true.
So it's two ways. The trainer will deliver the material, maybe even point out how you can apply that particular skill, but then it's up to the individual to take it up from there.
Okay.
I feel it would be quite unfair to say then the trainer should still go all the way, like Cynthia now takes step two, or can now take step three. That would be quite...
And this is where that's why I was really talking about the Connecting Classrooms project, because, like, from what I understand, you don't teach, you give people the, well, how can I put it? You give people a platform to use these skills, not necessarily tell them, like, what they need to do exactly.
Yeah, sure.
So that's a really good model. And I don't know, like, how does it work? Maybe we get into critical thinking now. What is it? How does it work? How does it help people develop some of these, motivation to look at things differently?
Okay, so broadly defined, maybe critical thinking is self-directed thinking that produces new and innovative ideas and solves problems, like real-life problems. This is like a general definition of what critical thinking problem solving is. And it has three different stages, is where you have reasoning, where you ask why. Why am I learning? Why am I at school? Why am I doing this? Why are we here? You first of all understand why. Then from there you judge, you make decisions based on the reasons you've given yourself why you're doing that. Then from there, how do you apply? Is it worth your time? Are you applying that to your life, and how that is that building value to you? So I think the idea around the Connecting Classroom projects in teaching critical thinking problem solving is also to help teachers, first of all, understand what they're teaching, why they're teaching it, so they can also help the pupils in class understand why they're teaching things. Things like growing up, most of us, we were never taught why we're learning, why there's a grasshopper that we spend 2 weeks learning about and we have to level, but we just had to do it. There was no one literally helping us understand the value of that. It's a lot, not until recently, there was no course focused on critical thinking and problem solving in our curriculum in Zambia. But it's not been introduced, yes. So, and the idea around is to challenge pupils, first of all, to understand why they're in class. Because if you're not interested in going to class and your mom just, you know, shoved you there, you'll not be very much interested in actually learning and applying the skills that you're getting. But if you understand why you're sitting there, the value of you being in class, you're more invested in what you're learning.
Yeah.
So I think it's about helping people, when they start in the first grade, understanding why they are in school, the value of it. So that at some point, at least, they also understand society more broadly, because they'll be questioning everything. Because I think, personally, I'm a person who questions everything.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of my religious friends don't like that.
Yeah.
They just believe. It's written somewhere in a book, but I'll ask why. And I think it's an idea that I think we're trying to build in a lot of young people, to ask why. Let them understand why they do things.
Me asking why I was met with a mango branch.
Yeah, so I think so critical thinking, problem solving is a very interesting model of dealing with things. We use different models to also help pupils to break it down so that it can be taught to someone in class. For example, pupils in class are maybe grouped, and they're given, let's say, topics. Then maybe they also have to teach in class about those same topics, so that they also feel valued and respected enough to be listened to. I think that helps them build confidence as well. So the critical thinking and problem solving training is not just focused on asking those basic questions as to why, building reason, but it's broad enough to consider the fact that you can critically think, and most people usually make a mistake by saying critical thinking and problem solving is about criticizing.
Mm-hmm.
It's not. And the idea is...
But you get why they would say that.
True. Yeah, so it's about, it's way broader than just teaching critical thinking problems, self-solving itself. It's also about building other social skills that a lot of people lack in terms of how do you speak in front of people.
Yeah.
You
know where I feel like this could also come in handy? The workplace.
Yes. I am agreeing.
I'm sure, I think the way you're looking at each other, it's like there's something there. Yeah.
And can I just quickly read them out?
Yeah, sure, go ahead.
So there's challenge or assumptions. So maybe if you have assumptions to something, you have to challenge them and find actual data.
Yeah.
Suspending judgment. So avoid judging something even before
you do your research.
And, mm-hmm. and find the facts. Then there's revising conclusions based on new evidence. So if there was a particular initial conclusion that you made, then you research and you find there's new evidence that is pointing to a different conclusion, you add it up and get a new conclusion altogether. Emphasizing data over beliefs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This one is problem.
Yes. Then there's the never-ending testing of ideas. So it should be
iterative. Yeah.
Yeah, which is quite important. Especially for us who are also software developers, because there's that whole iterative aspect
when yes.
designing and building
systems. Yeah.
Yeah. Then there's the perspective that mistakes are data. This I like, because I feel some people think mistakes could be avoided and closed off in a certain dark corner. corner and never spoken about.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that mistakes are determining, you have to actually learn from them and then build on from there. Then there's the earnest consideration of possibilities and ideas without always accepting them.
You know, I feel like I can relate to all of that stuff. I've been on the bad side and the good sides quite a lot.
Yeah.
I've been that person that doesn't want to change my mind because I like that a particular idea so much and I would ignore the data. I've been the person that's not open-minded.
Okay, that is earnest consideration of possibilities and ideas without always accepting.
I've been also the person that believes their assumptions before doing any research and goes straight into developing something and then eventually find pitfalls and then realize if I did research, I was never going to face these problems.
And the last one is actually looking for what others have missed.
No, it's very interesting because, like, especially in the workplace, this is something that comes up quite a lot. When you're working as part of the team, you know, everyone's got a different idea around what they think is the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you find yourself just so headstrong in believing that what you think is the right way of going about something. And it's the only right way to do it, that we overlook key factors that may actually influence the outcome of a product or something like that. It's really interesting. I'm preaching to the choir here. It's a big problem. Like, even Cynthia and I are part of many teams together, which is something we have never appreciated, but we find ourselves in so many meetings together.
Oh, yeah.
And we see this happen quite a bit. Quite a lot of times. So it's very interesting. And I...
And for me, I feel there's also this whole attitude when, like, especially the looking for what others have missed. If you do air out something that you think the others are not looking out for, if you're making a decision, sometimes it comes out like you're being rebellious.
Yeah.
So there's also that possibility that the others will arise against you. And yet you're just trying to really just critically think about the whole...
But so, speak to something you guys spoke about, effective communication earlier.
Yeah, I was actually about to make that point as well.
You have to literally help the other person also understand, saying, okay,
from this angle.
Because initially, you just get defensive. After I put in too much work in this, and all you want to do is just come punch holes.
Come punch holes. Yeah, and I guess sometimes it comes down to how we communicate some of these loopholes that other people may have missed, and also in the way these things are received, and also what you mentioned about mistakes being part of data.
Yeah.
It took me a while to understand that. Like, you're always looking to be perfect. You want your solution to have no problems at all.
Yeah,
and when someone points out a mistake, it's like someone's telling you you're a failure. Like, being able to separate those two, those two is something that I really feel like we have a lot of work to do, especially in our context as a country in sub-Saharan Africa. We see it quite a lot, and it really jumps out. You know, people don't really know it, but it really does.
Yep. Just on that, I remember something very interesting. A colleague of mine, Farai, she's one of the regional arts, one of the managers from in the arts from Zimbabwe, a colleague of mine from British Council. She told me something very interesting. She's like, you should learn, if you're going to work effectively in a very big team, you should learn to separate your feeling yourself from your work. You're not your work. So when someone is criticizing your work sometimes, it is the work that is the person is criticizing and not you. So do not become defensive to say, no, I know what I'm talking about. No, maybe you did something wrong. So try to hear out the person before you...
Guys, I'll tell you something.
Yes.
This happened to me actually. It wasn't so. This was last year, like late last year. I think a friend of mine and I had we had a disagreement on how something was supposed to run.
Yeah.
And you know, in that argument, it wasn't even about the work anymore.
Other things are coming out.
Speaking to the choir, man. So I've got a question. Like, how do you teach creativity and imagination in the curriculum? Are these things you can learn?
Yeah, I think
so. Can you learn to be creative? Yes. I always thought these are like talents, things you're born with that are just, like, in terms of the arts, like you're either an artist or you're not. You cannot learn.
I think that's what we're trying to do in terms of saying we're teaching creativity and imagination. It's not really to teach art, any art form. But the thing is about creating that environment, also allowing someone to feel free. Because a lot of, for example, it's about teaching someone to be a bit more diverse, to be free with themselves, to express themselves as they feel. So it's about also not necessarily teaching a particular art form or how to do it, but also about creating that environment, also allowing someone to appreciate or look at things from different perspectives. Because I think we live in a sort of rigid society. So that is also gets into academic life as well. You're supposed to learn the ones and twos, but not broaden your view of things. So I think the idea around creativity and imagination is allowing someone to explore. You know, tell us a story about how you feel. You know, it's about allowing someone to be free around who they are, which is not very allowed in our country, but yeah, close enough.
We're trying. we're getting there. Hopefully, we reach a point where people can express themselves and they're in an environment where there's no judgment.
But do you think our society allows us to look at things from different perspectives? I think we're a bit rigid, maybe. What do you think?
Well, we're very rigid, but we are making progress. I think we are slowly creating spaces where people can express themselves and have people listen to them openly before they give out their opinions on how they feel things are supposed to be. I mean, it's not cut across every discussion.
Okay.
But I feel like we're slowly getting into a space where, as a young person who's also an entrepreneur, I can be in a room and say something that may be contrary to what you feel regarding a certain thing, and you should listen to me and we can have a constructive discussion around it. But it's a lot of work.
Yeah, I do agree.
It's really a lot of work, and we'll get there. That's all I can say. We'll get there, especially with issues around mental health and how right now we're still trying to get people to understand that it's not a Western problem, and so on and so forth.
I'm happy you brought up mental health, because we're also trying to develop a program under our arts work where we are working in Zambia here. Our focal point is Thugger from Zone Farm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's the one who's like our focal point for Zambia. So we're getting different people from different countries, and the idea is to create a platform where they can use the art form and share resources, as well as build some sensitization around artists to so that they understand to say you have impact in the music that you make. And the core idea around it's mental health. It's something that we haven't spoken about a lot. There's a lot of discrimination around mental health, especially other things in terms of like depression, things that people like society, especially in rural areas or in areas where there's less development, people see it as you're just sad, come on, get over it type of thing. They don't realize that it can literally take a toll on somebody. Mm-hmm. So I think the idea around this is just to shine a light on it so that people can start talking about it.
So basically start having honest conversations.
Very hard to have.
Not very little reservation for people's feelings. But just tell it as it is in a way that they can still feel like they're in a safe space.
Yeah, fair enough.
Interesting. So how do you do this communication? What is the right way? Because I honestly feel like I've been in too many situations where I feel like I'm communicating something, but it really comes out differently from someone else, someone who's actually listening to you. Too often, it's happened.
I think that's happened to me as well a number of times. I think maybe it's about looking at things from different perspectives. I think understanding someone you're talking to. So, for example, let's say me and you are having a conversation. I think if there's something that it would be easier for me to communicate to you, because I think I have some background of who you are.
Mm-hmm.
So I know how to approach or talk about, have a conversation with you around something.
Mm-hmm.
But if I do not understand you to some extent, I might not understand your background, where you come from, your beliefs. So it might be harder for me to communicate. I might make a simple mistake. Something as simple as maybe saying something about you or complimenting something about you that you find uncomfortable, and just from there you become defensive. So everything that I say, you're receiving it with some sort of criticism to it, thinking maybe it's not well-intentioned, that type of thing. So maybe it's about understanding and having that environment and that space with somebody where you feel a bit more comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
I think from there you can effectively communicate. That's why You can offend a lot of people unwillingly, and sometimes you might be saying things that are well intentioned, but they just come out wrong.
Yeah, that is true, and I guess that's happened to me quite a lot. It reminds me of, because we usually have opportunities to work like in remote teams.
Yeah.
And while I've never worked remotely before, I've had the chance to collaborate with people across time zones. And it's not always the easiest, especially when you can't see the person that you're dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
You're not seeing their facial expressions really, and you don't know their culture also.
Yeah, true.
It becomes a little bit tricky.
Another aspect, I think it's something that you learn, effective communication, something that constantly evolves, I think, also.
Yeah. Well, for me, I think it has evolved, and luckily for my employer, they had someone run us through on how you do communication effectively.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember the order it is in, but for the initials, that is, but I remember the steps. So if you're about to communicate something critical or very important with someone, firstly, you give a brief background of the scenario.
Okay.
Yeah. So maybe if Mukuma did something that I feel is not right, so I don't go and tell Mukuma to say, remember on this day you were presenting ABCD and ABCD. When I give the scenario to remind him the scenario, then I go further. The next step is me giving him the impact of what he did. To say, yeah. Well, did you notice that maybe in the audience there was somebody who behaved like this, maybe due to a statement that you made? And so it's more first I could start with the positive impact, then I bring in also the negative impact, you know, like smoothly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Then the next step is to suggest, to say, don't you feel maybe next time you are presenting on this area, you try maybe to avoid to say such statements and maybe you construct them this way. I feel that way you are sort of avoiding somebody going straight into this defensive mode and then eventually they don't listen.
Mm-hmm.
That's something I learned.
Okay.
Then there's quiet.
No, I'm taking it all in, because I'm hoping I can learn a few things as I'm about to get into this week. I need to do a lot of effective communication.
That's how I said it all. All the best, Ma.
Thank you very much. I'll keep you updated, and I'll let you know when we're here again what happened.
Okay.
Oh, on okay. My quest.
Ah, okay. Like I'm about to at the end announce something.
Why do I feel like I don't know what this is?
No, you actually don't know. I announced it on one of the episodes to say the entire of 2019 I would not cut my hair. And yeah, the audience, our listeners cannot see my hair, but I've got a huge puff of afro. I did not cut my hair in 2019.
And in solidarity, I also didn't cut my hair the last 4 months.
I have issues with that. But
it's in solidarity. It's to support you.
No, that was separate from my goals.
No. Same thing, Cynthia. No. Come on. I'm on your team here. Anyway, I'm so proud of you.
Thank you.
Do you want to know something else we've managed to do in 2020?
What's that?
Launch another show.
Yay!
I know.
Daniel's show.
And if no one has listened to it yet, we'll post links in the description, because at the time of this recording, we dropped the episode on a Friday, and today is a Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been 2 days of awesome feedback.
I'm here to listen to it.
Why haven't you listened to it? I sent you a link personally.
I'll get to it. It's been a long weekend.
Long weekend indeed.
Trying to unwind and catch up.
Ah, you know what? This is an important segue.
Huh?
How do you spend your weekend? Like what brings you peace? What takes you away from the work environment? Because you have a life outside work.
Yeah.
You are not your work. Like what's your import? What's your chill thing? What's your zen moment?
Okay. So I get up for, I think around 1 on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
I go back home trying to catch up on some schoolwork.
You said you get off what time?
At 1. 13, yeah.
Okay, continue.
Yeah, so I go back home, catch up on some schoolwork. Then maybe later on a Friday, meet up with a few friends. Saturday, a few errands. That is, things I've been pushing back the whole week. I think I try to catch up on that. Then Sunday is my family time. I try to catch up with family,
mm-hmm.
mostly home. I usually go pick up my nephews and nieces and bring them home to grandma's house, mm-hmm. make a few noise, break a few things, and I take them back. I think it's that helps me bond.
Break a few things. Thing.
Ah. Breaking a few things. That is inevitable.
I think she's used to it to some extent.
Actually, like, they tend to miss it when they yeah. Bambinos are not around.
Because my mom that
who pays for this breakage?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why she didn't get very much upset.
And Cynthia, what's your pastime? What's your favorite pastime over the weekend? Apart from taking the boys for their haircut.
Oh no, the boys so I'm not with the boys now.
Okay.
It's no more taking that's somebody else's responsibility. That's my brother's responsibility now. He takes them to the barbershop as he's going to the barbershop. I hope he's doing a good job at making sure they're cutting that hair and not pretending to cut the hair and it comes back looking the same. Well, this is like a long topic anyway. So these days what I
think Kuma, there was some something for you in there.
Yes.
I know.
So these days, well, I'm trying to revamp I intend to revamp me going to the gym. Yeah, I've been doing lots of reading. I've been spending time with family. But, well, of late, I think I've been really doing my study materials because I'm really trying to get into artificial intelligence stuff. So I've been doing the deep learning material that is being offered by Facebook on a scholarship. So
congratulations, by the way. I don't think I congratulated you officially.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
What about you, Kuma? How is the weekend looking?
So, my favorite pastime over the weekend, when I'm not moving around for any community activities or don't have any extra meetings, my couch is my favorite place with my remote in the hands. Netflix, I've been watching a really dope show lately. It's really, really nice. I'll tell you after you know what.
No, maybe the listeners will.
No. I don't want to tell anyone else. I want to know. I'm embarrassed. I'm embarrassed, so I need to tell you guys in private.
Chick flick stuff, no?
Maybe.
I think there's nothing wrong with that. It's okay. You can share, man.
Don't get me wrong. I'm in touch with my emotions. I'm in touch with my emotions, but this particular one, I'm not sharing just yet.
When's the last time you cried watching a movie?
Hold up.
Yeah, you said you're in touch with your emotions. Let's hear. I'm also curious to find out what you were watching.
I was rewatching. What's the name of this movie? The one about like some civil war. I think that was in Sierra Leone.
Who are the actors?
I'm really terrible at actors' names.
Thank God.
I'm really, really terrible.
I can recognize their faces.
Yes, I
hold up. Let me just look through. Like, well, this won't even take time.
No problem.
But this movie is so sad. Every time it gets me, it's like whenever I watch Blood Diamond or whenever I watch Black Hawk Down, like, so emotional. Okay, continue. Let's go back into our actual conversation for the episode. Cynthia, what's your favorite tool for collaboration and communication while I'm looking for this thing?
For collaboration?
Mm-hmm.
Have a choice when it comes to code bases, that is GitHub. I don't have a choice. GitHub. But in terms of sharing, like, well, because I do product management and stuff, so eventually I'm managing Scrum teams. I usually use Jira for the tasks and seeing the performance of the team. Are they pushing in or pulling out of the list of tasks,
mm-hmm.
according to what I would like them to do and how much time they're taking on tasks.
And how's it been working? Beasts of No Nation.
Yeah. I've seen the movie. Yeah,
it had Idris Elba in it.
Yeah. Wow, you forgot Idris Elba.
Dude, I'm not really good at this stuff.
Fair enough. Yeah.
Okay. You should watch it. You don't like crying?
I think it depends. I didn't cry, but it was a sad movie, but I don't think I cried.
So I'm very much in touch with my emotions. I enjoy crying. It's therapeutic. Don't judge me.
Did you finish what you do on your weekend? You said you sit on, so do you spend the whole weekend on the couch?
Yeah.
Wow. Interesting. Mm-hmm. I'm happy she mentioned something about working out, because I think a lot of us invest a lot of time in our growing in terms of our career mentally. So we'd read, but yeah, we don't give a crap. We eat whatever we want. Am I allowed to say that?
You see?
In the podcast.
No, yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
don't worry.
Yeah, so we eat what we want.
I go to the gym. I try to go to the gym every day.
We were supposed to be playing football every Monday. I don't know what happened.
That is a long story. You know, when you start talking about money in a group setup, people get touchy. People get, I don't know what it is. Like, can we please normalize talking about money in this country called Zambia? Normalize paying back money. Whoever I owe money, I'll pay you back.
I also don't like giving people money. It just gets, like, the conversation gets weird.
Anyway, we'll have the conversation after the show.
Yeah.
Cynthia, I was about to ask, the tools I use, are they free?
Well, Jira has a free tier if you're going to have less than 10 people using it. GitHub, we all know, is absolutely
free.
You can even have private repos so no one will see your code base. Yay!
Let's also normalize sharing code bases. Don't be ashamed of your code. We all write bad code.
It's not that we're ashamed. Let me speak for myself, because I know I'm a culprit at not sharing what is on my GitHub. Mm-hmm. Because I'm working on something that I feel I'm not yet ready to share, but eventually I will share.
You should listen to the episode we had, City, which dropped some gems on this kind of behavior.
I know. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I will listen to it, mm-hmm. and I'll personally call City.
Uh-huh.
Yes. Anyway, yes, so most of them are free. Even there are some people who use Bitbucket, it's free.
Mm-hmm.
There's GitLab. Though here I've met very few people actually using GitLab.
Personally, for that I'm using GitKraken.
Oh, yeah, then there's GitKraken.
Mm-hmm. For like my. Anyway, source code management. But it's still pushing into GitHub. So, strange, I'm not using the GitHub client for it. But I think that's something that I use quite a lot and I want to try something new. And I recently got, what is this? I'm in the beta program for the GitHub Android app.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you can... You know what? Can we talk about how there's so much that's done to make sure that you carry your work home. If it's not like your laptop, it's on your phone. Your Slack notifications. Do you know that people who are afraid of email notifications, especially during a weekend or after work hours? Like, I saw this tweet about someone who was standing in a group of people, and then, I don't know if you guys use Slack for communication.
Yeah, we do sometimes.
They heard a Slack notification sound, then thought it was them, and they were terrified. Like, do you know, that's crazy.
But for me, I am going to look on the positive side. If I can, I'm running out of time, I have tight schedules, it will enable me to still do my work on my phone. If at any point in time I'm not near my laptop. Except the other thing is how I wish it was going together with our country's acceptance of remote work.
You think this country is not favoring remote work? Do you mean like local companies or...
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
I mean,
the public sector and local companies, most of them don't, I think.
Because for me, I'm like, okay, if I can still do, if I'm not having physical meetings with anybody, and the work I have, I can still do in the confines of my home, in my pajamas, with my coffee and my beggar and whatever makes me comfortable whilst I'm working, and I'm still being productive. Why do you need to look at me from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. in the office?
I like organizing that out. I think focus on deliverables, because a lot of companies do not focus on deliverables. As long as you show up, you can be on Facebook the whole day. As long as I am seeing you, that's what makes our public service delivery very poor.
Don't you feel like that's kind of tied into like culture also? Like, haven't you ever been in a situation where someone like is they enjoy seeing you, just enjoy seeing you right there, even if you're not actually doing anything. Like, they hate the idea of you going home, even if it's the same effect.
At least mix it up. Allow me to work at least 2 days in a week remotely. And 3 days, you look at me all you can. And we shall, if it has to do with no team building, we shall chat, we shall connect. But at least give me even just 2 days in a week that I am in my most comfortable environment, which will actually make me even be more productive. And the scenario of food, that is my best productive scenario.
When you're not seated down with someone staring at you.
Yes, my pajamas, my hair is shaggy, I'm having...
But the,
you know, do you guys have like an open plan kind of setup at the office?
Yeah, we do.
Does that work well, or is it something that you feel like hasn't...
I think it works well for us because I think we're a global organization, so I think there's a lot of lessons that we've learned across the country, and organization that has been around for a while, so I think it works quite effectively.
Hmm.
But coming back to our point just before I forget, on being able to work from home, I've realized it's a very steep slope, because one aspect is I find myself sometimes, like, I'm working from home on a Monday. I start work at 8.
Yeah.
Look at my phone, it's 20. It's 8 in the night. Okay, of course, I've been moving up and down, but I've been working throughout the day. So I overwork sometimes. So it's about also maybe growing to find that balance in life. That's why he was terrified, I think, to see the Slack notification. Because sometimes, especially as a young person, when I started my job, I wanted to prove myself. So I would work as an
adult.
I'd reply to my emails as fast as I can. I'd ensure all my tasks are done. I never went home till all my to-do list was ticked. Yeah. You know what I mean? So I think it's about growing and finding that balance between your work and your life and understanding the same... if you are too productive at some point, your productivity goes down if you do not also focus on other things, because you get frustrated by
your work. Your mental health.
So maybe my suggestion works out well.
2 days.
2 days, 3 days I'm in the office.
So it depends what type of job you do.
Mm-hmm. But I think in our line of work, it's only fair.
In our line of work, it's quite
well. Do you work over weekends?
No.
No.
How?
What do you mean?
Like you don't have work, do you take home with you? Because things like Microsoft 365 allows you to work remotely anywhere, so you have all your material resources, and you guys who do a lot of IT.
No, it's a personal choice.
Once you just carry your laptop home.
No, it's a personal choice.
It's just a personal choice.
It's a personal choice. Like, for me, once I get off work on Friday, I do not want to even, because we also use Telegram for support for our clients. I don't look at it until Monday morning.
For me, I think,
okay.
It's something I've just told myself. Saturday, Sunday is for me to rejuvenate. I'm not touching work. So there are times if my boss is throwing messages to say, oh, we need to do this, I'll just say, yes, we'll look at it on Monday. That is me hinting to say, I'm not going to look at it right now. It will be on Monday.
Because fair enough.
I mean, I also need my time to just refresh my mind and get ready for the Monday to Friday job that I need. I wouldn't mind actually working overtime during the week, but weekend, I wanna. No.
Fair enough.
I was that guy that worked. It's not really that I wanted to prove myself. I just wanted to deliver that project as soon as possible because I needed to jump to something else. You know, when you've been doing something for so long and you just want it to end so you can move on to something new?
Yeah.
I was in the office by 6:30, leaving the office at 20 every day. Saturday, I'd been in the office till lunch. Proceed to do community activities. Sunday, you know, you have errands that are running. Eventually, you will do some sort of work.
Yeah.
Monday, you're in the same routine, crashed badly. And then adopted Cynthia's
burnout
structure.
Listeners, if we did we do a burnout?
We had a conversation around it.
Oh.
We did have a conversation around it. But it's interesting. As much as the tools are allowing us to do all this remote work, it just means our bosses can just hound us whenever they feel like they can.
It also comes back to you really setting boundaries to say, you know what, this is my time.
Going back to our culture.
Yeah, and it also depends what type of bosses you have.
Depends what type of boss you have.
Yeah.
And setting boundaries can sometimes be insulting.
Yes.
But then if you
do you understand that there are people who you can't effectively communicate, no matter how much you try?
They've trained you to do this. They're supposed to do it.
Doesn't it also also still come back to when you're actually agreeing on your contract as you're joining the company. Those are things you also have to ask to say, my friends, if you're telling me I'm not working on Saturday and Sunday, it should be strictly only a huge emergency. But I should have my weekend.
I'm not saying you're wrong. I agree with you absolutely. But I'm just talking about the reality on the ground.
Let's yes. make an episode on this. Please. I have strategic people to invite even.
I think they were very interesting.
You look like you just shot yourself in the foot.
Oh, no.
Okay. No, no, I'm down. Like I said, I agree with you. It'll just be very insightful. But I'll tell you that the reality on the ground is not... It's a bit different. I mean, I see some contracts being breached on a daily basis.
Yeah.
But... maybe, I don't know, maybe it's lack of information. You know, I hear Ministry of Labor is really, really strict about contractual violations.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, people rarely do that because they're afraid they'll lose their jobs, and maybe that's their only source of income.
Yeah.
Breadwinners and so on and so forth. And then I was watching a YouTube video yesterday about American student debt and how it's really difficult to, like, quit your job with that huge amount of debt that you have over your shoulder. It's crazy. It's real.
So are we supposed to be somehow grateful we don't have that?
No, but somehow. Most people do. I don't know if it's been implemented yet. But
yeah.
Is it?
Yes, yeah, it has. Some people are paying back. Yes. Yeah. I don't know about CBU, but UNSA, yes. I have a few friends who are paying back.
For context, UNSA and CBU are the two biggest public universities in Zambia, and Before, students were awarded what are called bursaries so that they can be supported throughout university life. A few years ago, the government, well, technically, it was a student loan.
Yes.
But it's structured in such a way that people weren't paying back. And I think maybe it was an infrastructural thing. But a few years ago, the government decided that people needed to start paying back loans. And I think they set a period, I think from, is it 2003? 2007?
No,
I
don't
know. 2008?
2009.
So for as long as you start receiving student loans in 2006, you are obliged to pay back.
Yeah.
So I think people in the public sector are paying back now because
it's
easier for them to remit. Mm-hmm. So I think it's just trickling down into the private sector and non-profits as well.
But I think it's hard, especially for a lot of people who... As straight from school, you're not finding a very good job in most instances.
Mm-hmm.
So you're finding a job that pays you maybe, if it's an average paying job, but maybe $5,000 a month, and they're getting $2,000 from that. You're not investing in anything.
Also, they actually set an actual fixed amount.
It's not a fixed amount. I think it's a percentage. How much you earn.
Oh, isn't it? It's not a fixed amount?
Okay, I'm not sure, but I thought it was a percentage of how much you earn.
Okay, we'll find out, and then we can give out some information. And if there's incentive, if you pay back everything within a particular period of time, you pay less.
Hmm. It's over 100K though.
Hey, if you have 100K lying around, if you're strategic and suddenly you found yourself, with 100K somewhere lying around. I mean,
you can give it back to BC.
Give it back.
That's a tough one.
I'm kind of caught in between. I don't know how to feel about it, but... Hey, when you look at the fine print, they did tell you it's a loan, so it becomes a bit tricky.
But given the environment that a lot of us are in, I don't think it's very healthy. Because how do you invest in yourself and how do you grow? Because you have that burden on you.
No, that
and
is
you're just
problem.
Young. You see, you're early in your career that you still have to. Fair enough. Fair enough.
Okay, I've got one last thing. Feedback from all the schools that. The curriculum has been through, like we talked about Katete, we talked about like, I think it's Livala, right?
Luapula,
where they're growing tomatoes.
Oh no, that's Kablonga Boys.
That's Kablonga Boys.
Yeah.
Are there any other like good success stories?
Yeah. We have a number of them. So the program has been running since 2006.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been running for a while now. And when the fourth phase now is, that's what we're calling Connecting Classrooms 4. And there's been a lot of success stories around it. Just from being able to move Lusaka from number 7-8 in terms of performance to number 3, I think has been one of the major success stories. That a whole province, I think there's been improvement in performance. I'm not saying it's all attributed to our work that we've done as British Council, but I think we've contributed to that. We've also had made a lot of progress in terms of partnering schools. I think almost every quarter of the year, mm-hmm. there's a UK school coming into Zambia or a Zambian group of schools going to the UK for the exchange visit. And I think them being able to learn from that, from the experience that they have, I think the exposure that teachers get is very important, not just the sharing of knowledge, but I think both reciprocal visit, the exposure that they get. Because one aspect of our program is called Global Citizens. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it's very practical for someone to teach global citizenship to a child if the person is not exposed themselves. So I think that exposure, not just in terms of the exchange visit, as well as just the platform that we have, the school's online platform, it helps teachers get exposed to new material, new forms of teaching, as well as they're able to offer students resources that they can utilize at any point. So I think the program itself has been a huge success, and it's been growing. A lot of case studies I can share with you if you want, but a handful. Very documented, by the way.
Do you want to learn a few tips after this?
I can give you a template.
And the web also, yeah. Yes, I'll get that template.
Yeah, but I think success stories, it's a very important way, I think, to also just gain interest from not just donors, but also the general public to, I think, engage and participate in whatever program that you're running.
Speaking of donors, this year, Cynthia, we want people to be able to support the podcast.
People, in what way?
Dear listeners, what Mukuma said.
Cynthia will be the face of our campaign.
Serious?
Okay. That looks
yes.
Good.
Why me?
You are the one with the people skills, clearly. Elias and I don't have any people skills. Maybe Daniel, but...
I don't think so. I think you do.
No.
You say they're downgrading their own...
No.
He just wants to shift the work.
No. Come on. Come on. That's not the case. Cynthia, you do better at people relations than all of us.
Give us a case study.
Yes.
She gets a lot of voice notes while the podcast itself has never received one.
She has an iconic laugh. Maybe that's why.
Yes. It's my laugh.
We should use the iconic laugh. Is it this love?
So, I've never heard that before.
No. I really want to know what kind of what thought process went into this analysis. How does it incite violence?
Apparently, yes. You know the people who have that laugh. You know how emphasis would carry more weight if I want to use like vernacular language?
Go ahead.
Yeah.
You know that laugh is a chikukole kind
of. Yeah. I so, see.
I don't know how to translate for our other listeners.
I don't know how to translate that. To be honest, I don't know.
But apparently there are these laughs when one laughs, it's like they are mocking you. I think that's the closest description. It mocks you. So, well, several people have been telling me that my natural laugh actually sounds like I'm mocking.
So you're telling me that if I was telling a joke and you laugh like that, I would misinterpret it and think, you're not really laughing at my joke.
Probably
you're
laughing at
you're
me.
Laughing at me.
Damn joke.
Now I understand why it would incite violence.
So now I've been trying to reduce it, but eventually it pops up. I mean, that's what...
Imagine if you could record the laugh, then every time on the episode when someone says a joke, you can pay it in the background.
Oh my god, just don't do that.
I strategically remained quiet so we could capture the full essence of the laugh.
Oh, jeez. Okay, what were we saying? Donors, funders.
So in terms of support, basically to continue creating all this awesome content, we need your help. We need you guys to continue giving us feedback. If I think soon we'll launch our little portal where you can donate. I think the minimum is, I'll confirm the minimum in an episode, but people should be able to donate to the podcast and help us keep going.
Okay.
And I think we've done some amazing things. used to say that we were first in remind me, the magazine.
Nkwazi.
Then we've had about 2 articles that people have written about podcasts. They listen to both local and
international. Yeah.
International. Yeah. They've mentioned us amongst their top 5 and 10.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Yeah, we really need to continue, I guess. Yeah, we've been bootstrapping.
Quite a lot.
So we want to sort of shift from that. So, dear donors, as Mukoma said, it seems I capture your attention more. If you want to continue listening to my
And there it is, folks. That's the end of the show. You know what? I really miss Elias, and he couldn't be here today. But I'm sure he'll be here on the next recording. I am so happy that we actually had this conversation, because there's a lot of, we have a lot of conversations around community work. And like even in the previous episode, we talked about the challenges that community organizers are having. And in terms of leadership, I feel like there's a lot that we could learn from the Connecting Classrooms project, because even community organizers are people too that need this sort of like,
leadership skills.
Yeah, like leadership skills that allow them to then be more effective in the way they deliver some of the some of the material that we have, because it's really useful material, and it's really material that can push a lot of people. So how to get these people to understand how to deliver them, so people can appreciate them and use them, and eventually become sort of not global citizens per se, but just global ambassadors within their communities, and they can transfer these skills and so on and so forth. So can anyone call you or the British Council to find out more about the program? How does it work for schools?
Okay.
Like, do you identify them and then you zoom down there, or do people apply?
So we work in partnership with the Ministry of General Education. So the ones, would say want to work in Lwapula, then the ones that recommend the schools we work with. Because I think it's a 3-day to 4-day training. Then we'll go for another day. So I should say it's also a week training. So getting teachers and head teachers out of a school for a week, I think it's a lot of time for them to be away from their pupils. So we work with the ministry so that we ensure that we go at the right time. But it doesn't limit those that are just interested in the program can actually just visit our website. The school's online platform is open for anybody to sign up and take courses online. Then you can get certified.
So even I can sign up and take courses?
Yes.
Oh, great. We'll add this
to the courses. So it's schools online.
Schools online.
Yes.
British Council.
Okay, so that's
Connecting Classroom.
Yes. And also, visit the British Council website and go to Education and Society. You find the Connecting Classrooms. More information on Connecting Classrooms there.
I'm definitely going to sign up for one course.
Yeah, a handful.
And that will be a success story, believe me.
They'll write about you.
I need to become famous. You know, you need to write more articles about me.
Well, I have a blessed. Now let me go Christian now.
Okay. It's not what I was asking for, but go ahead.
So it seems most people I have written articles about have been sort of noticed by recruiters.
Mm-hmm.
So 2 of the ladies that I actually had written about actually got jobs. Recruiters actually connected with them because of the articles I wrote. So maybe that is another. So about you, who knows, you know, just saying.
That's interesting.
I wish you just said that off mic, so this resource can only be for me, you know.
Was it on?
No, now everyone will ask you to write about them, then opportunities will become limited. Oh, wow. I am mimicking the classic stereotype that we have in limiting opportunities for others.
Put down.
Yes. On that note,
I think you've seen it, so I think it's a good thing. It's a learning curve.
This is me now inciting.
If you want to get in touch with us, we are at CodecastZM on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. CodecastZambia on LinkedIn.
And your own handle?
Sour_bones on Twitter. I think everything of mine is in my bio. Well, it will lead you everywhere. It's like a rabbit hole. Did I tell you I launched my own personal website recently?
Bravo.
That's very sarcastic, Cynthia. You're not seeing it with a smile on your face.
Bravo.
Thank you. Yeah, and you can leave us a voice message. So with every link that we post, it will list all the episodes we've done with the most latest one at the top, with a list of all the different platforms where you can listen to the show from. We are available on so many platforms, including the major ones, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Breaker, Stitcher, and them. Scroll down and you will see a little bubble that says send a voice message. Send us that message of encouragement. Any message you want to send to Cynthia, just send it directly to the podcast. We'll be very happy. Huh? Yes. Okay.
The ones that are specific.
What if the person wants to be heard on the podcast, but they want to say something to you?
And I feel it's inappropriate.
Okay, fair enough.
Fair enough. Do you want to tell us how people can reach the British Council and you specifically after providing so many gems?
Okay. You can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at ZM British. Or British Council Zambia. You can also follow Southern Africa Arts if you are a creative and you want to connect to a wider network across sub-Saharan Africa, and also just wanted to see the opportunities that are going around in terms of what programs you can get involved in, what type of activities are going on around in different countries across sub-Saharan Africa, as well as the opportunities that we have for creatives and artists as British Council. My personal handle is Adbud, that is at ADMUUDA _ on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Adbud, that's ADMUUDA _
Okay.
Where is the login on this thing? Where is the sign up?
Okay, we have no idea what we can use.
Yeah.
My turn. Okay. On Facebook, Cynthia Mlenga Mlenga. On Twitter, I am Python Kadisi. That's it. I don't invite on Instagram.
Why?
Yeah, do we follow each other on Instagram?
No.
Huh. You're missing out on great content.
From you?
Yes. Yes. A dope picture that I posted yesterday. You should go and check. Find me on Instagram and check.
No.
Ah, suit yourself. Like I said, you're missing out. Right, you're missing out on good content. So, on that note, I've given you homework. Okay, it's been a great show. We were talking to Wumba, who's from the British Council, and we were talking about a lot of things. Technically, we talked about community, how we can use some of the concepts from the Connecting Classrooms project and kind of incorporate them in our daily lives and see how we can improve our skills and improve our communication with others and so on and so forth. And if you've made it all the way through to the end, thank you very much. We appreciate the support, we appreciate the feedback, and catch you on the next episode.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man.
You've been listening to Codecast Zambia, brought to you by Agora Code. Visit agoracode.community for more information, or like us on Facebook, that's @CodeAgora. We're on Twitter too, @CodeAgora.